Again, it's good to see everybody out this morning. And we have the opportunity today to come together to worship God. And sometimes as we go from one Sunday to the next Sunday to the next Sunday, we kind of get our routines and think this is just normal and that this will continue on forever. But you know, there's somebody this morning that's at some church building worshiping that won't be there next Sunday. You just know by cause of the number of people that assemble together and worship together that somebody is having their last Sunday of worship. And they don't realize that. There'll be maybe some that their health is such that they know that their time is limited. But others may think they have years and years ahead. But they don't. And that's the thing about life is that we don't know the outcome as far as how long we have. We simply know what we have now. It's the opportunity to worship God, and we need to always take advantage of it and do our best in our service to Him. A few years ago, I preached a series of lessons dealt with what's needed in religion. And I talked about some things like what's needed in religion is respect for God's authority. And then also what's needed in religion is godly zeal and intellectual honesty. And those kind of subject matter was a part of that series. And the last couple of Sundays, I preached on choices and consequences. And the last Sunday was on differences that makes a difference. And it just got me thinking about a subject matter that really kind of falls in both categories, and that is the idea of consistency. And as you look around and we think about consistency, I decide, well, what's the definition of it? What's actually a dictionary definition of it? So I went to my trusty dictionary.com, and here's what it said here. It gives us three definitions, depending on how you use it. But the first one is this, says a degree of density, firmness, viscosity, etc. The liquid has the consistency of cream or something on that lines. And I thought that probably isn't really what I'm thinking about here as far as consistency, although the idea of firmness kind of gets close to the idea here. But the second definition said, a steadfast adherence to the same principles, course, form. And it goes on and said, there's consistency in its pattern of behavior. I think we can see where that would apply here. The third definition also says, an agreement, harmony, or compatibility, especially correspondence or uniformity among the parts of a complex thing. And he gave an example, for instance, the idea that all the rooms in a house are the same color. They're consistent as far as the color of it. But so the second and third one in particular that we're kind of talking about, and that is the idea of consistency as we live our lives as Christians. And as I talk about that, I want to make some points about this. The first fact is that sometimes bad people do good things. They look around at some people around us and realize that person may actually be what we would classify as a bad person, but even a bank robber may, send his mother a Mother's Day card. Even a person that, let's say, is a liar will tell the truth occasionally, and a lot of times we understand in the courts of law when somebody's convicted of something, they have character witnesses come in and they'll talk about something good the person had. And without doubt, there have been certain things in life they had done that was something good. And yet, when we look at their life as a whole, we see, generally speaking, though, that they were not really good people. And we look in the Bible, and there are certain people that we look at that says, okay, they did something good, but really their manner of life was not that way. For instance, Balaam the prophet. When you think about Balaam the prophet, he did something good at least one time, and that is when Balak sent his emissaries to Balak to bring him to curse the children of Israel. In Numbers 22 verse 12, said God said to Balaam, you shall not go with them, you shall not curse the people, for they are blessed. So Balaam rose in the morning and said to the princes of Balak, go back to your land, for the Lord has refused to give me permission to go with you. And as you read that passage there and you go on down that chapter, you find that those people understood exactly what Balaam said and what he meant by that, so they went back to their king. And we have to applaud Balaam here because he actually did exactly what God said. However, you go on ahead and read the rest of the story there, we find the second time that they come back, he doesn't do what God says. And as you look at his life as a whole, as taught to us in the book of Numbers, you'll find that Balaam was not really a good prophet of God. In fact, as you go on and say New Testament, 2 Peter 2:15, talking about those who have forsaken the way of truth, have gone away and gone astray, he said, following the way of Balaam, the son of Beor, who loved the wages of unrighteousness. And so that's kind of a commentary on him. So we look and say, well, you know, he did something good, but he was really not a good person and not a good prophet of God. And so that's one thing we have to understand. And the second thing is, though, that sometimes you look around and a good person may do something bad. They look and they find that there are times that as Christians we may be tempted by something to do something that's wrong, even though we know it's wrong. And the Bible warns us about that. It was a possibility, we wouldn't have to have the warnings. And so you look over in 1 Corinthians 10:12, and say, therefore let him who thinks he stands take heed lest he fall. And that is given to us for a very specific reason, and that is, if I start thinking that I'm above sinning as God, I think that that temptation will never appeal to me, that Satan can never tempt me with something, then I'm in trouble. I always have to be on guard about what something may tempt me to do. Then as a Christian, I may get angry. I may sin in my anger. I may get, something else may appeal to me, that I may actually do something that's wrong. And therefore, we have various writings of the Bible that's directed towards Christians, warning them about these bad things. If you think about Ephesians 4:25. Therefore, put away lying. Each one of you speak truth with his neighbor, for we are members of one another. The reason he says that, because we can lie if we're not careful. Or he may go on down to Ephesians 5:15. And there he says, see then that you walk circumspectly, in other words, carefully, being aware of what's going on, not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time because days are evil. And so these things are written here because even Christians sometimes can do something bad. And as I think about that, Peter comes to my mind. And as you look at his life here, we would say, well, Peter was a person that, as a general rule, we say he's a good man, he's a good person, he's a Christian. But also we realize that Peter did something bad, and I'm not specifically talking about when he denied Jesus, although that falls in the category of being bad. But I think about over in Galatians, the 2nd chapter, verse 10, actually verse 11, where I want to pick up here, said, now when Peter had come to Antioch, I withstood him to his face, because he'd be blamed, for certain men came from James, he would eat with the Gentiles. But when they came, withdrew and separated himself, fearing those who were the circumcision. And the rest of the Jews also played the hypocrites with him, so that even Barnabas was carried away with her hypocrisy. And so here he's plainly labeled as being a hypocrite, you know, being inconsistent in his application of the word of God. And as we look at it, we would think, however, again, he was an apostle. He did preach on the day of Pentecost. He became an elder of the Lord's church. And I would think we would say, well, as far as a general rule of life, that he was a person that was a Christian, a good person. And then a third fact about consistency is that we recognize consistency when we see it and when we don't see it. Then I look around, and sometimes if I see somebody being inconsistent, I may think, well, that's not right. If I see somebody being consistent, I may applaud them. I may not even agree with them. But I can understand where they're coming from. The fact is they are consistent. We have the book of Daniel is a good example of that. And Daniel, 1 chapter, verse 8 there, he's offered the king's delicacies, and he said no. And it was a simple no. It wasn't no maybe or no if. It was a no. He would not eat the king's delicacies, and he would not. But you know, that was nothing unusual for Daniel. As you go on through the book here, we find that Daniel was consistent about this, as far as desire to please God. And we look and we find Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And Daniel, 3rd chapter, whenever the king made this image and he wanted everybody to bow down to the image and worship it, whenever they heard the sounds of the musical instruments mentioned there, and those men would not. And whenever the king was informed of this, and they basically brought these three men to the king, and the king said, well, now I'm going to give you the second chance. And I'll play the musical instruments again, and if you bow down to me, then everything's fine. But not only throw you to the fire. The fiery furnace. And we all know how that story ends there. But you know, that was not inconsistent with them. They were consistent in their application of God's word. And I go on about Daniel one more time in Daniel 6th chapter. That's when he's thrown into the lion's den because of prayer. And again, that wasn't something that was kind of like, I don't know what got in Daniel. I don't know why he did that. It's consistent with his belief system, with his all of his other actions. And so that's one of those things that when we see consistency, we acknowledge it. We can see it. And same thing, King Saul is my example of a man that was inconsistent. And there were times King Saul said the right things. There's times that he actually did something good, but then he would turn around and do something just bad. There's times he acknowledged David as being righteous and acknowledged that the God's with him, and then turn around and persecute him. And so with King Saul, he said, that doesn't really make a whole lot of sense there, David. He was just inconsistent. But again, that's what we recognize. We can see that. We understand when we see it. This here, there's a story, and I'm not sure this is exactly a true story. It's possible it is, although you go on the internet, you'll find various versions of this here. But it kind of illustrates the example of a guy is pulling up to a stoplight, a traffic light, and starts turning yellow. And he's given a choice here. He can either speed up and you know, kind of get through it, and it's almost still yellow, or he can stop. And he decides to stop. And the lady right behind him is mad because she thinks, I could have made it through that stoplight. And so there she is right behind him. She starts honking at him. And she starts yelling at him. You can tell by just looking around, she's yelling at him inside the car. You kind of know the kind of people that do that. And then also that she gets so mad, she drops her phone and her makeup. And then by the time the light's about ready to turn green again, she has a knock on her window. And it's a police officer. And a police officer tells her to get out of the car. And he goes and arrests her, takes her downtown. And they do the whole thing. They do the fingerprinting and the mugshot, and they put her in jail there. And there she's in there for a while, and then finally they bring her back out, and there's the arresting officer. And he said, I'm sorry, ma'am. Said, you know, whenever I saw you as you were yelling at the guy and as you were honking your horn, as you were flipping him off, and I saw that kind of behavior, and I started reading a bumper sticker. And I saw this bumper sticker that said, what would Jesus do? And I saw the other bumper sticker that says, follow me to Bible study on Sunday. And I saw your license plate cover that says pro-life. And I saw a little fish symbol on your bumper also there. And he said, I naturally assumed that car was stolen. And that was the point there. You know, she was simply inconsistent. He thought, well, it's a good thing she told him that she was Christian, otherwise he wouldn't have ever known it. And the same thing, sometimes that's the way people are. And so we think about consistency, we have to realize it's essential. In fact, Paul describes our life as Christians as athletes in training. And as you read the passage there that I read for us a few minutes ago, in 1 Corinthians 9 verse 24, it said, do you not know that those who run a race all run, but one receives the prize? Run such a way that you may attain it. And everyone who competes for the prize is temperate in all things. Now they do it to attain a perishable crown, but we for an imperishable crown. Therefore run thus, not with uncertainty. Thus fight, not as one who beats the air, but I discipline my body and bring to subjection, lest when I preach to others, I myself should become disqualified. And you know, the thing about that whole passage there is that we can kind of relate to this, at least if not personally in our physical training, at least in looking at professional athletes today. And we realize that those athletes, that those people, that they really, they train hard and they're consistent, the ones that are successful. I remember there was a guy by the name of John Daly. And he won, I don't know, it was a British Open, yes, but he won one of the big ones at a young age. However, John Daly really liked to party it up. And he liked to go out there and have a good time. And, you know, he wasn't at that level very long. However, there are some guys that can maintain that level of competition for a long time. And the reason is because they're consistent, because they train hard and they work hard and they do the same things every time that they have to hit the ball or every time they have to make a shot. Whereas it's the same thing they have trained themselves to do on a daily basis. Whenever I was at UK, we had a basketball player there by the name of Kyle Macy. And Kyle Macy shot free throws at like a 90% plus average. He was like 93% one year. Which means that when he gets on a free throw line, it's almost automatic. You almost kind of go ahead and chalk it up. But they kind of made mention of the fact that Kyle Macy had the same routine every time. Wiped his sock, hands on his socks, got to the line, did the same routine every time. Every free throw was the same looking. He had trained himself to do that. That's what athletes do. They train. And so while I look at this, I think about this. Okay, how to obtain consistency? And I put here faithfulness, or how do you attain those kind of things? One thing is, as Paul's talking about here, a certain responsibility for your actions. And as you look at this, at what we're doing here, and realize that everything I do, I'm accountable for everything. And the big things and the little things. As I mentioned a couple weeks ago, small decisions turn into big decisions. They all kind of have a cumulative effect. Well, same thing as far as our lives, realize that it doesn't matter if it's somebody watching or not watching. It doesn't matter something that we would say things really important versus not important. As I always need to try to do, I'm accountable for whatever I do. When you think about the parable of the talents. And Matthew 25 verse 21, as the Lord said to him, well done, good and faithful servant. You are faithful over a few things. I'll make you ruler over many things. Enter into the joy of your Lord. And I'll tell you, I don't know how many times I read that passage there, and my mind, while I read a few things, I kept on thinking small things. But actually it doesn't say small things, it says few things. And the point is there really something small serves to God? If it is, what is it? Isn't everything important as far as our service to God? Shouldn't I think about the accountability I have to Him and everything I'm doing? And so you start thinking about service to God, what's a small thing in your service to God? And as we look at that there, we need to just think, always be ready to answer some of the following questions. Somebody would ask you these questions, and you always be ready to answer these. And one question is, what are you doing? That's a simple question, right? What are you doing? Have you ever done something you kind of look around and think, I hope nobody ever sees this. I hope nobody knows about this. Somebody does. And nothing else God knows. But a lot of times people look at you and they may wonder, well, I wonder what they're doing. Or maybe another question is, where are you and who are you with? Again, very simple questions, you know, as far as people hang around with and what you're doing with those people. Or, by what authority are you doing these things? Jesus was asked that question. He also asked them questions along this line here, as far as the Pharisees around him. By what authority did they? Who told you could do these things? And we just need to realize that, you know, consistency means that we are accountable, that we have responsibility, and we realize the fact that if, as the old adage goes, when you walk into the store and they say, if you break it, you buy it. What that means is, even as accidental, you still own it, you still bought it here, that we are accountable for everything we do. And you know, if I start thinking along those times, it matters a lot. It kind of influences how I know to make my decisions. And so that's one thing as far as simply understanding accountability. But second thing is here, practice discipline in every area of your life. Some people are pretty good at compartmentalizing their lives. And I realize as people, we have different roles we play in life, that we're husbands, wives, moms and dads, we're workers, we're, co-workers, we're Christians, and we have all these different hats we put on. But what I mean by this here, sometimes people compartmentalize their lives, such as secular versus Christian, or may think, well, what I'm doing right here really doesn't influence anything else in the rest of my life. And really that's not true. Because everything you do affects you in one way or another, and it will affect how you do other things also, how you react to other people also. Let me give you an example of this. We had a guy at the congregation I preached at, and he was a foreman at a place that they made little metal things. They made these little metal things, and then they shipped them off to other places they made bigger metal things out of. And so they had a big heater, big furnace there, and they would melt metal and make these little metal things out of those. And one time, one of the guys on the shift got hurt, got burned. And he needed to go to a doctor. And somebody said, somebody needs to take him to a doctor. And then the response of the foreman was, well, if you take him to a doctor, you better clock out. You know what? I heard about that. I don't know how many years later on that I was actually living there. But everybody mentioned that about this one guy. And he was a Christian. But that followed him. That's one of those things people just looked at and thought, you know, that's not the way a Christian would act in that, you know, in that kind of situation. His first concern should not have been, we got to clock out. But that's the way his first reaction was. And so let's think about this. As far as everything we do as Christians. And after all, Colossians 3 verse 17 says, whatever you do, word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through him. And so everything I do, and I need to think about this, as far as when I go to a ball game, you know, I'm going as a Christian. I should speak as a Christian. Sometimes people get really carried away at ball games, start yelling things, start doing things they should not do, and have you ever looked around and kind of think, well, you know, that's not the way a Christian acts. Or maybe as you go to work and people respond different ways at work, or maybe even you think about Ephesians 6 verse 5, bond service, be obedient to those who are your master according to flesh with fear and trembling and sincerity of heart as of Christ, not with eye service, men pleasers, but as bond service of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart, with goodwill doing service to the Lord and not to men, knowing that whatever good anyone does will receive the same from the Lord, whether he's slave or free. And as you read all the way down through that, what he's saying is, as a worker, today we applied as a worker, that we need to always do our best, always be honest, always be working whether the boss is there or not. And so he's saying that, and it goes on, talks about masters, how you need to treat your slaves. And so we need to just realize that everything I do, if I go on vacation, I go as a Christian. And so that's another thing, as far as just be the kind, as far as and that kind of life there. And be the kind of person that God expects you to be. Somebody wrote an article a number of years ago that always stuck with me. And to ask some questions. I may have mentioned this one time here earlier, a few years ago. If I have, I apologize. But it was asking a series of questions. And the questions were things like, can one be a teacher and be a Christian and go to heaven? Can one be a doctor and be a Christian and go to heaven? And one can be, and just fill in the blank there, whatever you want. Then a policeman or a soldier and go to heaven. And at towards the middle of the article, but later on, it said the answer to those questions is no. And you know, usually when you say that, everybody perks up, thinks, oh, you mean I can't be, and start talking about those things. But the last part it said, but one can be a Christian and be a teacher and go to heaven. One can be a Christian and be a doctor and go to heaven. One can be a Christian and be all those other things and go to heaven. But the thing is, you gotta be a Christian. That's first thing you want. And again, that's simply consistency in our life is how we live. And then that goes along with this third point here all the time. All the time, and that is, you really can't take days off of being a Christian. It's just like when Paul talks about the athlete training and exercising. You can go on a diet. In fact, a lot of people go on a diet for a day, and then they spend the next week off of the diet. Or like exercise, you go out there and you exercise, and then you take off of 2 or 3 weeks before you exercise again. You realize that doesn't do any good at all. You have to do it day after day after day if we're actually to start doing any kind of good. And so the same thing in the sense that you just simply can't splurge and think you don't lose weight, or you can't exercise and then take off the next week and think you don't actually show some improvement. And the same thing goes religiously as far as being Christian. And that somebody requires us to do the same thing or have the same commitment every day. And sometimes people's religious practices are that they may say, well, I'll do what I want right now, I'll straighten up later on, or I'll do better next week, or I'll do better sometime in the future. And there may be in some religious practice that says, it's okay to sin it right now, but it's okay because, you know what, tomorrow you'll do better. You'll do better. Well, then think about the fact that what we do every day matters. Again, back to accountability. And so I'm just thinking about, what am I doing today? Am I reading my Bible today? Am I praying today? Am I helping others today? Am I serving God today? Those are the kind of things that builds consistency. And the final thing is that consistency also requires the act with a purpose. And that's what Paul's talking about there when he talks about the athlete that trains you do so to receive the prize. the athletes are out there and they're not just playing. They are training, they are exercising, they are doing their best. And as we go through our lives, we have to realize that as an athlete has a purpose, and you train that person as a Christian, I have a purpose. I have a purpose in life. And that life is to serve God. And that purpose is to go to heaven. That's my purpose in life. And that's not your purpose. And my purpose also is to help other people get to heaven also. If that's not your purpose in life, then you have the wrong purpose. But you look at this here and it says that then if I act with a purpose, then I'll do whatever it takes to go to heaven. Over in Hebrews 12 verse 1, it said, therefore we also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily ensnares us, and let us run with the endurance of the race that is set before us. Marathon runners do not carry extra weight. Track people do not carry extra weight no matter what distance they're running because it hinders them. And what he's saying is, as a Christian, I need to think about my goal and think about, does this help me attain my goal? Does this help me reach that goal, or does this hinder me? Am I attaining my goal? And therefore, we need to run with purpose. We need to act with a purpose. Let me give you one last passage. And that is over in Luke 10, verse 27. And we know this passage as the parable of the Good Samaritan. And I just want to read it with this idea of consistency, again, in our minds. And let me just ask you, which one was being consistent in this parable? It said, verse 27, Luke 10, it said, the answer said, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, with all your mind. And your neighbor as yourself. And he said to him, you have said, answer rightly, do this and you will live. But he wanted to justify himself, said to Jesus, and who is my neighbor? Then Jesus answered and said, a certain man went down from Jerusalem to Jericho, and fell among thieves, who stripped him of his clothing, wounded him, and departed, leaving him half dead. Now by chance a certain priest came down that road, and when he saw him, he passed by on the other side. Also a Levite, when he arrived at the place, came and looked, and passed by on the other side. But a certain Samaritan, as he journeyed, came where he was. And when he saw him, he had compassion. So he went to him and bandaged his wounds, pouring on oil and wine, and set him on his own animal, brought him to him in and took care of him. On the next day, when he departed, he took out 2 denarii, gave them to the innkeeper, and said to him, take care of him. And whatever more you spend, when I come again, I will repay you. So which of these three do you think was neighbor to him who fell among the thieves? And he said, he showed mercy on him. Then Jesus said to him, go and do likewise. You know, the Samaritans may have their issues, but at least in this parable here, that Samaritan was consistent as far as taking care of the man. The other two were not. We need to make sure that our lives are one's consistency and serve to God. And always try to improve from day to day. I appreciate very much your kind attention and listening to the lesson. We don't have a song set to who at my door standing. And this is the invitation for those who may need to respond in any way we can help. I want you to let us know, stand as we sing. Thank you.